Good evening, you all. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. At this time, we begin the technical met. Technical met number 1473 of the series that began 31 years ago in September. This is a gathering of people who are curious. It's my opinion, and the opinion of quite a few people, that mankind shows the greatest amount of progress when it displays curiosity. When it asks the question, what is Mother Nature saying? What's really going on in this situation? How do I understand all this stuff? And ham radio operators, a significant percentage of them are curious people who want to know how their transmitter works, how that antenna works, how that feed line works, how that propagation works, how to make them work better, what's really going on. So for those people who have got that curiosity and want to know more about it, the clan gathers every Sunday night. And for a few hours, like 4 hours nowadays, we discuss subjects like that. We try to teach each other what Mother Nature is saying and what's really going on. Let me drop. A certain percentage of the population does not want to know what's going on beyond the front panel, what's going on beyond the key of the car. They don't want to know any of that. If it's not working correctly, they go to a repair person and pay the price and let it. And hopefully it works better, and they hope they're not being raked over the coals. A certain percentage of the population lives their life that way, and for them it works. Sort of. I don't think so, but that's just me. That's my attitude. So, as I said, the curious people gather. There is a large amount of brain power in the New York City area, around New Jersey, Connecticut, lower New York State, Long Island, and that's where this particular club has... A repeater that has very good coverage in that area. I'm hearing a little bit of music in the background. Not very much. Quite a bit of repair was made of the repeater today, so that an awful lot of that cross-coupling of a broadcast station is just about eliminated. Let me drop. So these are the curious people who gather here. This little preamble that I give at the beginning of each TechNet. I know that you guys who have signed into the TechNet a lot of times and listened a lot of times have heard it hundreds of times. You're a little bit tired of it. But by way of the emails that John and I are getting, KC2WGB, we know that the word of mouth is spreading as to what is the TechNet on Sunday night. And various clubs in places like Florida and Canada and California and Chicago suddenly by word of mouth find out there's something called the Technical Net. They think they're interested in it. By way of IRLP, EchoLink, and things like that, they enable their repeater to start repeating the information in that area. And so people in those areas are hearing the TechNet for the first time. And the first question has to be, what in the world is this? What are these people are doing? How do they do it? What's the menu, if you know what I mean? So I try to give a little bit of an explanation of what's going on.
What do you mean, just about?
Okay, correct me on the just about. How do you think that should be worded, Eric? Go ahead.
Simple. Do you hear it or you don't hear it?
Okay. With my earphones on, I'm hearing a tiny bit of noise, 40 dB weaker. Just barely perceptible. 99% of it's gone. Well done. Not to worry. The little tiny bit that's there, very few people are going to know about it. So I wonder if anyone else... We'll do a little bit of a survey later on to find out if anyone else is hearing it. There was a good-sized flea market that occurred today in Levittown. This club held a gathering. And pretty soon I'll be asking you guys a little later on, what did you buy? What did you see? What got away? And what was your best bargain that you found today? What was it like? Do you suggest any changes as to the way the flea market is run? For the first time... They had to live with the fire protection rules where only a certain number of people were allowed to be in the building simultaneously. So instead of packing everybody in there real tight like we've done in the past, I hear tell that people had to come in waves. In other words, some people had to wait outside until some of the others left in order not to violate the fire rules. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. Let me drop. Over the 31 years of the Technical Net, we've slowly developed an evolving menu. The menu is the first hour or so, hour and a half. We take people's questions and comments because they do have a question or a comment. They sign in, we take them in order, and try to handle their questions in a slightly brief manner. Over, I put that in quotes. I'm not always brief, as Hal K6DPZ will bring to your attention. I will be asking you guys, as you sign in with your question, whether or not, when we get to you, I'll ask you, do you want the brief answer or do you want the more verbose answer? The menu we worked out is that for the first hour, we answer questions and comments. That's followed by John, KC2WGB, who collects the mailbag information, in other words, people who don't yet have their ham license or don't yet have the equipment by which they can talk on this 2-meter repeater directly and ask questions directly. They don't have that. They give him a snail mail, an email, a pigeon message, or whatever, and we choose a few of those. 2 weeks ago, John got 263 emails in 1 week about the TechNet. That was the all-time record. Hopefully he's not getting that kind of a barrage of this particular week. Let me drop. Possibly what was happening there is that a slightly controversial subject about the operation of antennas was discussed the week before, and people wanted further information. So John will choose 2, 3, or 4 of those typical messages that he gets on the mailbag, and we discuss them as the second item on the menu. The third item, Paul, WS2N, our space expert, tells us what's the latest that National Aeronautics and Space Administration has been doing. And particularly, he brings me up to date on what Voyager is doing, my favorite piece of hardware. Well, alongside of Hubble, the Hubble Space Telescope, two of my favorite pieces of NASA hardware. After that, we discuss deeper subjects for those who are really curious, who want to find out at the molecular level what's happening. And that takes place with the next remaining time. The TechNet, regardless of the announcement every week saying that it starts at 8 o'clock and ends at 11:30, it starts at 8 o'clock and ends at 11:59. You could say it ends at midnight. At midnight, the machine is turned off automatically at my request. Let me drop. And the reason for that is because some of these guys are so enthusiastic that they would go on until the sun rises. And some of us have got to go to work the next day. Some people are unable to stay up for the whole 4 hours of the TechNet, and that's very understandable. Particularly, some people have to get up at 2, 3, and 4 o'clock in the morning to go to their place of business. There is a solution for that. A very enthusiastic guy in Holworth, New Jersey, named Mike Perry, KC2NJI, has established a website. He established that 6.5 years ago. Let me drop. And you go to that website, and virtually all of the TechNets have been recorded for the last 6.5 years. So you go to Mike Perry's website, which is at amateurradio.tangovictor. Go to amateurradio.tangovictor, choose the right year, the right month, the right week, the right reel. They come in 1 hour reels, and you listen to those reels. What some people do, who like to listen to the TechNet but can't stay up that late, they download it to their recording device, and while they're on the train going to work, while they're driving to work, while they're on their noon hour, they listen to that material. So there's a way around that. Okay, that gives you some idea as to what the menu is. At this time, you're going to sign in with your call letters and your name and the word yes. You need not sign in just because you're listening. And I'm not going to ask that mysterious question, is there any emergency traffic? People who are net controls quite often ask that question, there never is an answer. I don't know why they keep doing it. I'm not going to ask that question, but I'm going to ask you guys to give me your call letters and your name and the word yes. And the word yes means you do have a question or a comment for the net. Okay, I'm going to take check-ins at this time. Give me your call letters and name. K2RIW listening.
November 2, Echo Oscar.
N2XJN, one question for the first hour and the deep stop after Paul.
Okay, so far we've got Rich and Wes. Anyone else to sign in? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
KGPT, Joe.
Okay, Joe, our guy who does a lot of astronomy. Well, I'd like you listening to Joe. Okay, once again, we've got Rich, Wes, and Joe. Anyone else? Give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW.
WA2VDH with a quick comment.
Mr. VDH, please tell us your name.
Sorry, yeah, the handle here is John, name is John, and I just wanted to pass along greetings from Dick Flowenglass at AIL. He's adjuncting at Farmingdale, and he just wanted to pass greetings to you.
Very glad to hear that, Doug. Richard and I worked together at Airborne Instruments Laboratory, and I guess last time we saw each other face-to-face there was approximately the year 2000. So he's saying he's a adjunct, I think you said, at Farmingdale. Is that true, John? Go ahead.
Yeah. He's adjuncting, I think it's in the digital signal processing course. He's just adjuncting there for this semester. I think he's at digital now. Go ahead.
Glad to hear that, John. John, is there any help, is there any hope of talking Dick Flowenglass into becoming a ham radio operator? As you described as to how much fun you're having and how much information you're getting by listening on two-meter repeaters, does any of that rub off? Do you think he's possibly going to get a license? Over to you, John.
It's a possibility. He definitely has a strong love for the material, a very strong interest in it. We have, in the electrical department, there are two hams there, so maybe we'll do a little arm twisting. Hi.
Yeah, a little bit of evangelizing is required there, John, as I see it. He'd be a good guy to become a ham. I think he just doesn't know what he's missing. And with your description of your hands-on experience, I think you can convince him. Okay, one last call. Anyone else to sign in with a question or a comment for the Technical Med? Give me your call letters and name right now. KQRIW.
That's 2N with the Space Report. Name is Paul. Good evening, Dick.
Very fine, Paul. Okay. Rich N2EL. Glad to hear you've got a nice, stronger signal on 2 meters. I'm guessing somebody's helped you put up a better antenna on your house in Massapequa Park. Your newer house in Massapequa Park. N2 Echo Oscar, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick. I had to lower the power a little because the power supply kicks out. Does this sound okay?
You are 95% signal and 5% noise. You're sounding very good, Rich, so leave it right there. Go ahead.
Okay, Dick. The question is as follows. A couple of years ago, I built an Ellingcraft K2 QRP rig. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's 10 watts out, very nice radio or digital step tuning, wonderful receiver. It's not a snap-together modular kit. It's really bags of parts and PC board. It took me quite a while to put it together. One of the options... among others that I put in is a battery. I believe the battery is a gel cell. Came from Ellingcraft. It looks like the same type of battery they use in an alarm panel. That's so the radio can run off 12 volt DC from the power supply or off the battery. Now, I have not used that radio very much, and I'm going to set it up here in Massapequa Park. It's been sitting for maybe a year and a half, battery totally discharged, and now I'm trying to charge it. The battery will not take a charge. I've run into this before with nickel metal hydrides. I have a MSJ antenna analyzer. The batteries got totally discharged. I couldn't charge them up. What's the story, Dick, and can I bring them back? You know, bring them back into operation.
Among the serious VHF operators, the guys who are on UHF and SHF frequencies, 432, 1296, 2 gigs, 3 gigs, 5 gigs, 10 gigs, and so on, Ellingcraft is a very popular rig. It has a tunable IF. Most of those guys get to those higher frequencies by what's called a tunable IF system. In other words, there's a kind of an RF amplifier and a mixer at, say, for instance, 2 gigs, that brings it down to a frequency like 2 meters or 40 meters, and then the tunable IF allows you to tune across the band. The front end is a crystal-controlled oscillator into a mixer. On these tunable IF transverters, that's the most popular way that guys get on the ham radio frequencies. Quite often homebrew, although there's quite a few kits you can buy. So among those guys, Elecraft is a very popular rig. It's popular because it's got an extremely good synthesizer. It's got an extremely high dynamic range. Very well-designed piece of electronics. So that thing is very respected, and I recommend you hold on to it and treat it with tender loving care. Now, I've got some opinions about gel cells. Let me drop. I own a number of these Sears Roebuck lanterns, large flashlight-like thing that's got a gel cell inside. And what I've discovered is that when a gel cell is thoroughly discharged for a long period of time, quite often it will not accept a charge. It builds up some kind of a layer on the plates, and it acts like an insulating layer, and therefore the plates themselves become thoroughly insulated from the liquid that's inside, the active material, so to speak, and nothing happens for a long period of time. Of the three flashlights that I've had that kind of a failure occur on, two of them came back to life. I put them on the charger. Absolutely nothing happened for a week. All of a sudden, a week and a half later, it started accepting the charge. Eventually, if you leave the gel cell battery on the charger for a long period of time, there is an 80% chance, in my opinion, it will come back to life. I've also heard stories about people who will temporarily put a power supply onto the battery with the right polarity, plus on plus, minus on minus, and raise the voltage far above 12 or 14, the usual charging potential, maybe 18 or 20 volts, until it starts drawing current. And once it starts drawing current, once some little corner of one of the plates starts breaking through its insulation and starts accepting a charge, all of a sudden the whole darn battery comes back to life. As I've said, of the three that I've had to have that failure on, two of them came back to life, one did not, no matter what I can do. So I recommend you give it a try. So either a higher voltage or just put it on the normal charger and leave it there for a couple of weeks before you make a judgment that it's not accepting a charge. Other than that, if you can't bring it back to life, and I think there's a medium good chance...
Repeater, time out.
And if you can't bring it back to life, and I think there's a medium chance you can, buying a new gel cell is not that difficult these days, Rick. For somebody of your resources to completely replace that gel cell is not out of the question. But my recommendation is you give it a try to bring it back to life. And don't give up on the charger too rapidly. Leave it on there for a good long period of time. Anyone else who has experience with gel cells and bringing them back to life, and from time to time we have got people who've got real expertise in this area, if anybody has got some smarts on that area, give us your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
JD2CXK with a comment and a solution.
Mr. CXK, go right ahead. We're all ears.
Good evening, Dick. Craig here in Queens. I was a sailor for, maybe 18, 19 years. And when you're a sailor, you got to learn about making electricity and batteries. Yes, you were correct. By raising the voltage, the charging voltage, to approximately 15.8 to 16.4 volts, you create a condition known as gassing. This blows the calcifications off the plate and allows you another one of the 9 lives left in that battery. Now, one of the drawbacks is you will not be able to reach full capacity. I think the equation is you lose about 4 to 7% of its overall capacity after every gassing event. But it's better than throwing away the battery. KD2CXK.
Hey, Craig, that's darn good information. 4 to 7% loss, which really means 95% of the capacity in ampere hours is left. That's a good trade-off. So you made it sound like it's a magic voltage. Did you say 18.2? What was that voltage again, Craig? And where did that exact number come from? And how long do you leave that voltage on there? I presume you leave it on until you start seeing it draw some current, is my guess. I'm letting you know that it's beginning to come back alive. KD2CXK, K2LIW in the tech van.
Yeah, from what I remember, it was between 15.4 and 14.6. And the reason I remember this is I had a wonderful charging controller on my last sailboat made by a company called Heart Interface, H-E-A-R-T Interface. And it was connected to, I had two 200-amp power line alternators on my Yanmar four-cylinder diesel, and one was set up just to charge batteries. And you could, if you had a condition in the battery, a panel would show a yellow light saying, you know, there's a condition, and it would recommend gassing, a gas charge, and you'd push a button, and then it would start a timer. I think the timer was 4 hours. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I do remember seeing that was the voltage applied, and I think it throttled. I think it was from 15.4, went up 50 point something to up to 16.4 towards the end of the cycle, and then you had to let that battery cool down for, I think it was an hour, and then you could begin a normal charge cycle. KD2CFK.
W2ZGA.
ZGA recognized. Thank you, Craig. And it is my belief that gel cells are a lot more forgiving in this area than ordinary lead-acid car battery. I think a lead-acid car battery, if you discharged it all the way to ground and left it there for a long period of time, it goes into some kind of a sulfating condition in which after that the ampere hour capacity of the battery is drastically decreased. But there's something magic about a gel cell which is very recoverable. W2ZGA, please start off with your name, sir, and your information on gel cells. K2LIW in the tech net.
Okay, his name is Jerry. And my experience comes from inheriting two scooters from a family member who was incapacitated. They kind of left them to me. And I didn't need them until I hit 83, which is this year. And of course, the gel cells were in pretty bad shape by that point. And the way I recovered them is very similar to what you said. I took a power supply and I kept raising the voltage until they started drawing a little bit of current in the mills. They were like 15 amp cells. Then I set the power supply to control the current so that it wouldn't go above. Sorry, I guess I held the button too long. I set the power supply for a constant current, because eventually the current creeps up, and I wasn't watching it that closely, so the constant current solved that problem.
UPS.
And eventually, like a month later, the batteries worked fine in both scooters. Take a dick.
Well done, Jerry. Okay, so you brought two gel cells on that scooter back to life. And Craig has just told us about his experience of bringing them back to life. Let's see what Rich has got to say. I'll bet you're on his truck. Some of his equipment might run on gel cells as a standby power. K2 Uniform Papa Sierra, Mobile. I'll bet you you're in Ohio. K2RIW, glad you signed in, Rich, and go right ahead.
BGB with a comment.
Okay, Dick, good evening. Yeah, I'm Mobile. I'm in Pennsylvania now. It's a facility out of West Virginia. The comment I want to say is I had picked up a OptiMate battery charger, and if you remember about a year or so ago, when the Canadian stations were checking in, they were discussing different types of battery chargers, and this is one that will actually desulfate an old battery. I've had some batteries that I was not able to charge using a regular charger because the voltage was too low, but when I hooked this thing up, it did charge them. It brought them back. It uses pulsing technology, varying voltage, and it's all microprocessor control. It's easy to just plug it in, hook it up, and the computer inside takes over. And I've had it bring back a couple of batteries that I thought were completely gone. I mean, so if you'll switch once, I could pick that one up and see if I can put it on my charger for a while and see if that works. Otherwise, you can try one of the other methods that he's hearing tonight. Dick, back to you, K2UPS.
How about NICAD?
Okay, we're talking about jail cells right now, Barry, and NICAD, entirely different situation. So, thank you, Rich. Darn good information. And I know that John wants to also give us some hints on this. Wonder how many jail cells you've had, and have you had them use some of the other nine lives, John? KC2WGB, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Oh, absolutely, Dick, and good evening. I was just going to recommend that if you do not have a battery minder or a device like that, if you're going to use a standard power supply, you want to put like a 2-amp fuse in series with that. So as you raise the voltage, if you don't pay attention, the fuse will blow before the battery does, because they're not well vented, and that expansion can cause a problem. Just a little safety tip. Back to you, Dick, KC2WGB.
As I remember now, I was following either Jerry or Craig's suggestion in that I own a power supply, let's see, Lambda is the brand name, where one knob allows you to set the voltage, another knob allows you to set the maximum current that this power supply is capable of giving. So I remember during the time I wanted to restore a gel cell, I think I set it on 16 or 17 volts for the voltage, and I set it so that it would go into the current limiting mode at something like 50 or 100 milliamperes, knowing that once it starts accepting a charge, I didn't want to put some ridiculous number of amperes into it where it generates a whole lot of outgassing and heat. And like you say, very few gel cells are very well vented. In fact, they're essentially sealed lead-acid batteries. The good news is they're sealed and they don't spill acid all over the place. The bad news is you want to make sure you don't overcharge them beyond what the manufacturer recommends in current and or voltage or the combination of the two. The number of watts you're putting into the battery, you definitely want to limit it. So be careful about setting it on a high voltage power supply where it draws no current and you walk away for a while, because when it suddenly comes back to life and starts drawing current, if you don't have some kind of current limiting by way of fuse or a real electronic limiting control, then in theory you could get yourself in trouble. Anywhere else with any further information about rejuvenating gel cell batteries, give me your call letters right now, K2LIW in the TechNet.
NY2HS, please, subject.
NY2HF. NY2HF. Dennis, bet you you've used gel cells with your system out there. Dennis is the guy out in Cutchogue, the Eastern Fork on Long Island, and by way of his photovoltaics, he is essentially at the threshold where he can disconnect himself from the grid and run thoroughly independent as far as electrical power is concerned. So when it comes to a battery storage of energy, I bet you've been down that road quite a bit there, Dennis. NY2HF, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Thank you, Dick. Yeah, you got to be really careful with the gel cell. I try to stay away from them because they're pretty finicky. I go to absorbed glass mat batteries. I just got, I just got nine from the landfill donated to our club down here. And we're going to use four as backup, and the other ones have been distributed. They're 255 minutes at 20 amp hours. They're massive batteries, they're D batteries. So what I would say is the gel cell is not as good as the absorbed glass mat. That's the one you want to go for. And you want to have a three-stage charger for those. Back to the net.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Dennis, that the absorber glass mat type battery is a higher quality kind of battery. However, I don't think they come as small as these gel cells that are inside of an LE-Craft receiver. So the more superior battery may not come in that particular size, but it's something to look out for. There was one other person who gave us a set of call letters Who was that? Give us your call letters and your name once again on the subject of gel cell batteries. K2LIW in the TechNet.
WHYY.
Joe recognized, I think it was one other person, but maybe it was you, Joe. Let's see if there was one other person who wanted to sign in. And to APG. Dave recognized. Okay, we're going to take those in that order. Joe, to B2RYY, go right ahead.
Yeah, you're talking about the W2RYY here. You're talking about these batteries. I might have asked you this question directly, but I'll ask it again for the rest of the segment. I've had batteries go bad in a UPS, which I guess are a similar type of battery. And the effect that's happened was when they go bad, for some reason, after a length of time, the batteries will actually swell up and crack the case and emit like a dry powder from the batteries themselves. And in fact, in one UPS, I'm having a hell of a time getting the battery out of the frame because it's expanded so much and you can't physically get the thing apart because the battery will come out of the actual frame where it's mounted in. But I just wonder what's going on in there. Have you ever heard of this happening before?
Yes, I have, Rich, and it's happened to me. APC, I think, is the brand name of these UPSs I own. I own three of them. One of them had the battery failure you described, where the battery went down to nearly 0 ampere-hour capacity, and it started expanding. Because of a lack of vent on gel cells, I think you need an intelligent charger, and I think the earlier versions of these APC brand of UPSs did not have an intelligent charger, and as such, it destroyed that particular battery. I, with great difficulty, removed that battery, went and bought another gel cell that was the factory replacement for it, put it back into that particular UPS, and within a couple of months, I had the exact same failure again. So I'm led to believe that the electronics of the APC itself had failed. My other APC UPS has never failed, and it's run for 6 or 7 continuous years. So there is a method of failure of the APC, I believe, where it loses its ability to treat the battery in the correct manner. That's what I think is going on. And so the whole charge-discharge characteristics of properly treating a gel cell, hopefully the electronics is supposed to do that for you automatically. The charger is not supposed to put in more than the right amount of charge, more than the right amount of voltage, and so on. So that's my guesses on that. Let's see what Dave has experienced. I bet you've used gel cell batteries in your operation, Dave. And to APG, K2LIW in the TechNet.
KC2QIQ with a comment on those APC chargers.
Glenn recognized. Dave first. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, good evening, Dick on the net. And to APG, Dave and Matt Siegel. Hello to Dennis, out on the East End. Always interested in what he has to say. He's got a lot of experience and good info when it comes to the backup battery. Regarding the gel cells, I've noticed as they get older, 4, 5, 6 years down the road, they do swell up, just like Joe said. And one way to check them out, you know, if you're thinking of possibly trying to rejuvenate them or recharge them, you just take your hand and run your hand along the side of the battery. The 12-volt battery is going to have 6 cells inside. And if you run your hand on the side of the battery, if you feel bulging, it's not totally flat on the side, that's a sign that the battery is pretty well shot. Once it starts to bulge a little bit, you'll feel it if you run your hand on both sides of the battery. Dick?
How about that? The field test for testing a gel cell battery. Before I turn it over to Glenn, was there another person in the process of signing in? I'm going to stand by and get his call letters and name. K2LAW.
The comment.
Okay, I heard.
Good morning, PHS, for the comment.
I heard two people say comment. One of them was NY2HF. And the other one, we missed the call letters, but we'll get to you. Glenn is the next guy. And tell us about these APC brand of UPSs. I think you're saying that some of them can be battery eaters, is my guess, Glenn. KC2QIQ, K2RAW in the TechNet.
Yeah, good evening, Dick. Good evening, everybody on the net tonight. Just a quick comment about APC. APC had a recall. This is going back, oh my goodness, a lot of years now. I would say somewhere between 5 and 10 years ago, there was a huge recall where if you had the APC, the first thing that they told you to do was to unplug the battery, send back the whole backup, and they would replace it for you. And the reason behind it was the charger inside went out of regulation and was a severe fire hazard. What it sounds to me is what's happening here is that either there are some APCs that weren't sent back on the recall or made it back out in the field somehow. But that is a very serious fire hazard. Right now, that in other words, if you're seeing the gel cell turning white and not coming out, that's just one step from catching fire, burning down your house. If anything, I wouldn't bother replacing the battery. I would unplug that unit, throw it away, and just buy another, a brand new, you know, battery backup, power backup unit. It's your house. You don't want it to go on fire. KC2QIQ.
Darn interesting, Glenn, because the two APCs that I received that somebody was giving away were approximately 7 years old. So they were in the period of time in which they were supposed to be recalled. These were not recalled, and I ended up with them, and one of them was definitely a defective unit. Okay, good to know. We got two other people with comments. One of them was Dennis, NY2HF, K2RIW. Go ahead, Dennis.
Yes, it's correct. When the battery gel cell starts to swell, it's breaking down. You want to get rid of it. It happens because it's being charged, can't handle the charge, so it builds up as heat inside the battery and can't go anywhere because it's a non-vented battery. What I would say is the best APCs to get are ones with an external Anderson clip. And in that way, you can have the primaries as gel cells, but have the secondaries as deep cells. And you'll get a lot more out of it than the gel cells. Gel cells are only good up to a certain amount of amp hours. Deep cells go way beyond those. So you want to get something that you can hook external batteries up to, and that's going to help you out, you know, through the long haul. You also want to make sure that what you have is a pure sine wave and not a pulse width modified or a sawtooth, because those can actually harm some of your electronics, some of your more sensitive electronics. Back to the net.
Okay, we have another person with a comment after Dennis, and then Eric in that order. And what many people discovered during Superstorm Sandy is that the UPS, which is rated for some number of ampere hours, some number of watt minutes and whatever, to run their computers and other vital pieces of electronics, quite a few people discovered that the capacity of their system was a small fraction of what they thought, because they hadn't checked it for a couple of years. I was one of them. My particular computer running on a UPS, I knew it was going to be good for something like 25 minutes of running the computer, and I could slowly close down the document that I was composing at that time. Boy, did I get a surprise. At about 7 or 8 minutes into the UPS operation, when Long Island Lighting Power was no longer giving me any juice, my UPS had been beeping all that time. I said, hey, I've got 25 minutes. I'm only 7 minutes into it, and it went dead. So I found out that my UPS, which was, I think that particular one, was only a short, probably only 1 year old. So it had a small fraction of the ampere hours that watt minutes that we're supposed to have. Who was the other person who said he had a comment? Then I'll go over to Eric next, but there was one other person saying he had a comment. Please give me your call letters and name right now. K2LIW in the TechCast.
Was Eric.
Okay. The voice didn't sound like Eric's. Eric, your voice is quite low, but you sound good. KE2EJ, K2LIW in the TechNet.
KQRIWP, KJ. And I want to point out a couple things about jail cells for you. Jail cells have a couple of enemies. And by the way, for Dennis, the APC supplies provide pretty much 98% pure sine waves as their output because they're designed to operate commercial equipment, which has to be reliable. Now, I'm a very large user of jail cells. The first enemy of the jail cell is heat. Not necessarily the heat generated by charging, but heat of the environment. What happens is the electrolyte is not liquid per se, it's a very viscous material, very low viscosity material, very thick. And because the gel cell has a certain amount of space to deal with gas before it flows the safety plug, a certain amount of expansion that you get. So the battery gets really hot and you charge it, you actually start to bend the plate from the internal pressure before the plug blows. Let me let it drop for a second. And the earlier APC supplies had a very rudimentary charger. Basically, it's designed to idle charge at a, you know, trickle current for the battery because it is not a continuous demand device. It's really an intermittent demand device, whereas they're designed to, in essence, keep your computer running until it can safely shut down. That's what those things were designed for, and you'll find that many of those UPSs have either a piece of Ethernet cable or some other USB cable designed to run with some software on your computer when you do get a power failure to tell the machine to gracefully shut down. So that's another thing. The third most important thing is gel cells have a life. If you ever keep the instructions to come with a gel cell or come with the supplies, you need to put them on a maintenance schedule. They do not last more than a period of 2 years of continuous trickle charge. So I just wanted to point those things out as I am a user of many gel cells. When you lose a diode or you lose a capacitor in some of these UPSs, all bets are off, gel cells start to swell. If you're seeing white powder coming out of it, that's been happening for one heck of a long time. K2RIW, K3J.
NY2HF for comment.
IW, comment VE3JIW.
Okay, we've got Dennis and Jim with further comments. Don, good information, Eric. I didn't know that under continuous trickle charge, gel cells are only good for 2 years. And I think gel cells are quite often used with these emergency lighting systems that are in many buildings. And you can tell by the little pilot light on the side of the darn thing, light-emitting diode, that it's in a continuous trickle charge mode. And I guess if you're doing a good job of maintaining your emergency lighting system in a commercial building, you're replacing those gel cells something like once every 2 years or every year and a half. Good to know. Alrighty, Dennis with a comment, and then Jim in that order. NY2HF, K2RIW in the TechNet. Go ahead, Dennis.
I wanted to add one more thing specifically for Dennis. I forgot.
The problems with the gel cells is that they come over on boats, so, or ships rather, and they could take up to 6 months to get here. So the life of the 2 years is already spent sitting on a boat getting over here. The other thing is that, to my knowledge, most of APCs, unless you buy the higher quality ones, are either modified or sawtooth sine wave, not pure sine wave. You have to, you know, spend the extra dollars to get the pure sine wave. So they're meant to have a computer that's already running continue until you shut it down, not from startup, where the expenditure of power comes in. So I disagree with the that all APCs are pure sine wave. I just don't I don't agree with that. Back to the net.
Very fine, Dennis. I'm going to guess that Eric buys a higher quality APC than the rest of us. because he's maintaining some vital equipment at a broadcast center, two different broadcast centers. You and I tend to buy the APC that's on sale, if you know what I mean. So I think at best we're getting a stepped sine wave, where the peak voltage is 167 volts and the RMS is 120 volts AC, but it really is far from a sine wave, is my guess. Although I'm going to look into that. I'd like to look at the waveform coming out of my APC brand of UPS, because to really generate a sine wave requires some fairly elaborate electronics. And I'm skeptical that mine is doing that, but we'll soon find out. Let's see how the guys in the Golden Triangle, let's see how they treat gel cells and UPSs. VE3JIW up there in Canada. Glad you signed in. K2LIW in the TechNet. You've got it, Jim.
Hey, I'll be quick. VE3JIW, Scott. I was trying on the TechNet chat. Nobody else is there. Gel cell, I believe, can be a misnomer. There is an actual gel cell product, and lots of things aren't gel cells, but people think they are. The ones that are, sealed lead acid, rechargeable batteries, they have a vent. It isn't the vent that plugs. I believe the crystals dry out and swell, or they split, and there are little vents. You pull the top off, and there's little rubber caps. And if you charge them too long and too hot, you will actually push liquid out the vent. But I think we're using gel cell like Kleenex, which is a brand of tissue. So you've got to be careful when you say gel cell, you're talking about a particular type. But they do have a service light. But by the way, in emergency lighting, there's a code requirement that they get tested that is cycled to run 30 minutes in some jurisdictions. So possibly any well-maintained emergency lighting unit gets cycled as part of testing. Is a local authority having jurisdiction on what codes, life safety codes they enforce? As you were talking about the life safety enforcement of occupation of your ham set, but most emergency lighting units will be cycled monthly. But are you really talking about a gel cell, or are you talking about a sealed lead acid? Because I think gel cell may be actually a brand name.
You brought up some very interesting points, Jim, and I thank you for that information. Yep. Do we really know the difference between a sealed lead-acid battery and a gel cell? And they do get treated slightly differently.
QQIQ.
See what Glenn's got to say on this one. Go ahead, Glenn.
Gel cell is a form of lead-acid. In other words, lead-acid covers a family of batteries. You'll find that, in other words, when you go to a different chemistry, when you go to like nickel metal hydride or lithium ion, those are different chemistries. But basically, a gel cell is in the lead acid family. So it's just basically how it's packaged and how the electrolyte is stored. Back to the K2RIW, K2QIQ.
Let me go back to you in a hurry on that one, Glenn. The electronics, assuming you're using a smart charger on a so-called lead-acid/gel-cell battery, is there a electronic difference of the battery itself? Is there an electronic difference in the way you properly charge and discharge a battery that is truly gel-cell versus sealed lead-acid? Do we treat them identically, or is there some differences? KC2QIQ, after some beeps, K2LIW in the TechNet.
NY2HF, comment. Okay,
Dennis and Eric in that order, but Glenn first. Go ahead, Glenn.
The chemistry of lead acid, regardless of whether it's a liquid type of acid, a gel type of acid inside, the electrolytes, the profile of charge is basically linear current, in other words, current limited charge rate and top off, and then terminate charge. So you could go with a Cadillac charger that's three state, but it's linear charge. And the basic charge rate is C over 5. Whatever the capacity of the battery is divided by 5, and that's the maximum charge rate. So as long as you don't exceed, in other words, let's say if it's a 10 ampere battery, you divide that by 5, and that's your charge current.
So in other words, don't ever exceed it. You can always charge with less current, but you certainly never exceed one-fifth of the capacity of the battery in linear charge. To top off, and how do you know when you're at top off? Is when the current limiting starts dropping, so the current drops down and the voltage starts leveling off. And then the top off voltage rate on lead acid chemistry is 120% maximum, Dick. And that is also has to be temperature compensated. So you have to look at the battery manufacturer's chart when they drop. Each battery manufacturer usually supplies some kind of a data sheet, especially with the compacted type of sealed cells that will show the charging temperatures and the charging current rates. But usually C over 5, in most cases as far as the current goes, is pretty much a very, very safe charging rate. But the top-off voltage, in other words, where you allow the voltage to go to maximum, is usually 120%, and that's usually a 20C door, which is around 70 degrees Fahrenheit. So you kind of have to be careful with that one, but I would never go more than, I mean, in a good typical charger, if you have a 12-volt battery, you really never go above 14.1 or 14.2 volts in a room temperature type of arrangement, because the battery will overcharge. Back to you, Dick, for any other comments. K2RW, KC2QIQ.
Very good, Glenn. Let me ask you this. What you call top-off voltage, and I've heard some people call it float voltage, a kind of a trickle charge. When the battery has been brought up to nearly 100% of ampere-hour charge, and then a smart charger, I believe, will choose some particular, you call the top-off voltage 14.1, 14.2, depending on local temperature, and other people have called it the float voltage, and some people have called it the trickle charge region. I believe that in that region, the battery is still being very slowly consumed as far as its life cycle is concerned. In that so-called float or top-off voltage region, I suspect that if you go beyond 2 years without replacing that battery, you're probably pushing your luck. Those are some guesses on my part. KC2QIQ, K2LIW in the TechNet.
With the proper temperature compensation technique stick at the top, so in other words, if you were to get the data sheet on the battery and look at the characteristics at this top-off float charge, trickle charge region, and you were to temperature compensate the top-off voltage where you're at the very, very top, in other words, when the battery's current starts diminishing, you're not at 100% charge. It still takes a period of time, which is usually about, so in other words, at a C over 5 rate, is basically it's going to take 5 times the ampere-hour time to charge that battery. So in other words, you can back calculate and determine your charge time. Top-off time is typically 5 times the charge rate. So in other words, when you're at this top-off area, float voltage, whatever we're calling it these days, it's all the same thing, and the current starts dropping off down to this trickle current, you have to allow it to stay there 5 times. So basically, if you can charge your battery in 1 hour, typically you want to leave it in that top charge area for about another 5 hours additional. So it would be a total 6 hour charge time, and if you had a true Cadillac charger, what would happen is you'd want to terminate that top-off charge at that point. And then maybe just every once in a while go back for maintenance and just put a little trickle charge on it, maybe every month, every 30 days or so, if the battery's not being used. But that's, that's very typical of the lead acid chemistry deck. K2RW, KC2QIQ.
Yeah, I think what you just described, Glenn, is the ideal super smart charger. I am guessing, and maybe I'm wrong, that a number of these standby lighting emergency systems in buildings where I see the light-emitting diodes on the side of it lit, suggesting that it's continuously being floated for days on end, weeks and months on end, I have the impression that many of these systems in commercial buildings continuously charge those batteries at the float voltage trickle charge region as opposed to leaving it alone for a while. That's my guess. But as we talk to Glenn and Eric, maybe we'll find out more on this. NY2HF, K2LIW in the TechNet. You've got it, Dennis.
Break.
In a three-stage charger, you got
bulk, absorption, and float. And that's the ideal. One where it's putting in above what's necessary, one where it's putting a little bit less so it absorbs the remainder of the charge, and the float is just to maintenance the battery. As far as, these batteries, as far as putting them on a regular charger, you know, I'm talking about a one-stage charger that maybe reduces its voltage over the course of the charge. What I found was that if you take a normal charger and you put it on a gel cell or an SLA, it fries it. You really need to give it a reduced amount, not what a car charger would do, because you're going to bulge the battery, you're going to destroy the battery. So that's just my my experience. Back to the net.
Very fine, Dennis. Eric is the next person making a comment, but I heard somebody say the word break. And on this particular repeater, those words are reserved for a true emergency. The person who said break, do you have a true emergency? K2LIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick. Okay. Eric is next. KE2EJ, K2LIW. Go ahead, Eric.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Let me just point out something. Gel cell, which is also known as a valve-regulated lead acid battery, right? They got these things still, but they do have a valve to release. The way they make them safe, in essence, is it uses a, you know, sulfuric acid, a diluted sulfuric acid mixture, and they add silica to it. And it turns it into a thick gel and paste. Right? So that's where the name gel cell. By the way, the absorbed glass mat batteries are similar in nature. It's a different form of a VLRA. Now, the way the darn thing works is that as you use the battery, as it does its conversion, you make the transfer between plates. And what happens is that the expendable hydrogen gets absorbed and held in the gel material, in the electrolyte material itself. When you charge it, it's then recombined, so there's no outgassing. But if you charge it at too high a voltage, the valve in there, which is a vent, it actually a vent, will release the excess gas. Sometimes those valves don't work and the battery, you know, stands. You lose that gas, and then when it comes to the life of the battery's life gets reduced because now you've lost a lot of those hydrogen ions that was getting ready to be recombined. So you actually trap the hydrogen in the gel by the plate, and then when it's recharged, it does the reverse thing. That makes it so that the battery works without any worry of spilling liquid acid. And by the way, guys, if you mix and match in a UPS gel cells with glass mat batteries, the internal batteries are different. Most of the manufacturers recommend that you not use the gel cells inside if you're going to use the glass mat battery. You want to use match batteries. So generally, when you have a big system like that, and I have quite a few of them, whereas if the combination of series parallel, where they put them together to generate voltage. K2RIW, K2J.
Thank you,
Chef, for the comment.
Okay. Dennis, go right ahead with your comment.
Okay, you're correct that they don't say to mismatch it, but what you're talking about is you have the primary, which has gel cells in it. You have the external, which it will feed off probably after the primary is spent. It really doesn't matter at that point. as far as swapping out gel cells inside the APC, actually I would recommend it. Get rid of them, because